Get ready for another hour of quality confabulation as we present yet another December edition of Chris Fabry Live. Today, it's that maven of organic mayhem, my toxic life coach, Andrea Fabry, with us today for a Toxic Talk Tuesday. One of the patented features of this program that makes people stop in the street and say, I want to hear more of that Chris Fabry Live program when he has a Toxic Talk Tuesday. We're going to talk about a lot of things today. We'll discuss Christmas trees. There's news about fish that you need to hear. Holiday fragrances. We might talk chocolate. We did that last year. And we're going to discuss your pets and a popular product. This comes from a huge demand by listeners that we mention this. Plus, as if that weren't enough to draw you in, we are going to take your calls on an open forum edition of Toxic Talk Tuesday. Questions, comments, observations, maybe something you have incorporated into your life because of this feature on the program. All of that is straight ahead on Chris Fabry Live. Here's the number, 877-548-3675. You've always wanted to talk with my toxic life coach. Your chance right now, 877-548-3675. Nate McMillan is our producer. Ryan McConaughey is our engineer. Trisha McMillan's our coordinating producer. And R.K. Washburn is answering your calls at the toll-free number right now. Now here she is, that Yuletide Wonder Woman, spreading organic Christmas cheer without the wassail, Andrea Fabry.
Well, you know, you could make organic wassail, for sure.
How would you do that,
Andrea? Well, I'll have to look it up now that I think about it, but I don't know. I know how to make vinegar, apple cider vinegar from apple cider, but that's a whole different
I have to
story.
Tell you, folks, before the program today, Andrea already uttered a memorable phrase. She said this sentence, I try to have some seaweed every day. It's true.
That's because I was talking with your producer, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of questions was Nate asking?
No, he didn't bring up seaweed, honestly. I did bring up that, but we used to talk about
you bring
supplementing.
It up. You're almost evangelical with your seaweed talk, aren't you?
And I said, you know, maybe try adding seaweed because it has so many minerals, amazing minerals in seaweed.
But welcome back. How are you? I haven't seen you since the last time you were here.
Right. How's it going? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good.
Okay.
Had the family in.
Hey, we should talk about the activity. I know that would be me, right?
Yes. Let's do that.
We should talk. Have you mentioned the activity?
No, I don't think I have. If I have, it's been under the table.
Okay. Would now be a good time?
That'd be a great time. You go right ahead, Andrea. It's your program.
This is a great toxic tip. Toxic talk. I do. Because, and here's how it might relate to toxicity. Not that we'll necessarily veer off to my favorite subject, which is wireless radiation. Yes. I'm not saying that. Or that we'll talk about devices and buying them for children. Perhaps we will. But, you know, now when we have holiday gatherings, you don't want to say, hey, leave your cell phone at the door, right? And your kids and so forth. I just think holidays have changed in so many ways. But in anticipation of this, for Thanksgiving, Chris had this idea of having a coloring table and even a coloring contest and coloring your favorite family memory. And then he printed out a turkey to color.
Yeah.
And
I did.
That one looked a little, most of our kids are in their 20s. I wasn't so sure how that might go over. But we just put everything out. We put brand new crayons and this whole, an hour, 2 hours, everybody.
Everybody did it.
And loved it. And my 30-year-old daughter did a Frozen turkey, you know, the letting go animated movie.
Disney movie.
She did that. And our son-in-law did an excellent Minnesota Vikings turkey.
Yes, he did.
So I think that's, and I said, so what? Let's do that for Christmas because it was such a hit.
Yeah. Well, can we tell the listeners the little, at the beginning when I just put out the turkey picture, you weren't all that happy with it.
Well, I just said that.
You did?
Yeah.
I wasn't listening.
But that's okay. I'll repeat myself.
Paying attention.
So originally, as I just mentioned, I was a little skeptical about the coloring turkey, and he turned out to be completely right. So
isn't that nice of you?
Okay,
so today it's an open forum, but you have some things on the agenda, not just coloring. Hey, we could talk about crayons and toxicity if you really wanted to.
But one of the things that you have brought to the table is fish to eat.
Well, I didn't bring any fish today, but we do get our salmon from a fisherman who has relocated to the Arizona area. I used to be in Idaho for 30 some years. He has gone every June in the depths of the Alaskan waters to get salmon, and that's been his livelihood because he's legally blind. He's got a fascinating story, and this is all leading somewhere because you asked about fish. And right before Thanksgiving, so I thought of Randy, and I really want to ask him how he feels about this. Right before Thanksgiving, the FDA announced that it has approved the first genetically modified animal, that being a salmon. And so I think this is going to prove to be pivotal in our culture, and I think it's opened the door for a lot of things that should be concerned. And to me, one of the biggest issues with the genetically modified salmon is you won't know that. They are going to allow the producers of the GMO salmon to volunteer to put it on a label. So if you buy breaded salmon at a restaurant, you'll have to ask. But even if you buy it in the store, it may or may not say that it's genetically modified.
Well, let's be fair to this new salmon, Sammy Salmon. The producers of this, or those who've genetically modified it, are saying that it can't reproduce. They have modified it to do that. So if it gets, let's say, one of them jumps out, for example, out of the fish hatchery
tank,
and gets in with the regular population, that you're not going to have crossbreeding of a GMO and that kind of thing. So there's nothing to be concerned about.
Right. And, you know, I think it just goes back to what does this mean in terms of embracing the way God made the earth, I guess, because it's taking from one type of a Chinook salmon and an eel pout fish and making it so large, grow so fast, and they're all sterile females, so that they're larger and, you know, more, it's profitable because then you can grow more and grow them faster. I go back to just my gut feeling about that, and something seems, I'm skeptical. At the very least, I would want to know that as the consumer. Like, I've worked hard to find fish in the wild in clean waters. It's hard to know what you're getting these days with any food product. But the interesting thing about the GMO salmon is it's going to be classified as a drug. It's a drug. It's not a food. The FDA announced that as well because of the nature of this product. Any genetically modified animals will be under the category of drug.
Are there more genetically modified animals coming along? Let me finish this.
Sorry.
Are there more animals coming along that you know of? Any other kind of fish or?
I saw a list and it's not coming to my mind.
Chicken? No GMO chicken?
Not from our backyard, that's for sure. But these fish are being raised outside of the United States in tanks. So that's one of the things, the precautions. It's not even being raised here. And it's so many layers of, you know, protection in the tank that they won't get out. And
you're just asking the question, basically.
All I'm doing is I thought our listeners would be interested in this announcement because I think it'll prove to be so big and everybody will have opinions on that.
All right. So we start with salmon. We're going to move to poinsettias and Christmas trees. We're also going to cover people who have called us in the past couple of times. They have talked about this specific product, and they said, you've got to tell people. You've got to warn people about this thing and your pets. So we're going to reveal that. And we're also going to open the lines. If you have a question today about toxicity for Toxic Talk Tuesday, 877-548-3675, or maybe something that you've incorporated into your life after listening to this program for however long you've listened, 877-548-3675. That's right. My toxic life coach, Andrea Fabry, is with us. You can go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, and you can link to her website and do all kinds of things right there. Go to chrisfabrylive.org. Toxic Talk Tuesday today.
Join the conversation. Call Chris Fabry Live now at 877-LIVE-675, 877-548-3675.
She's back, Andrea Fabry, my toxic life coach, today on Chris Fabry Live, 877-548-3675. 3675 as we talk about salmon, as we talk about plant Christmas trees. Oh, it's just, and then your calls. The floor is yours, and I see a lot of people who want to get in on a number of things. Let's go to that plant that you mentioned, or I did before the break, which is a poinsettia or a poinsettia. I'm being, this is thrown at me like I have.
No, I asked. I thought my tone of voice during the break was extremely, you know, calm and respectful. I was like, I always thought it was calm poinsettias. Well, yeah. I mean.
Well, you can say it either way. As I look on at least this website, says you can say poinsettia because it is spelled P-O-I-N-S-E-T-T-I-A.
So true. You're right.
And if you just
never
look at
that.
It, you would say that's a poinsettia. But poinsettia is also an acceptable pronunciation of euphorbia pulcherrima.
Mm. And here's the interesting thing. Some people, or I've heard that they're toxic.
Right.
And
I've heard that too.
That's a myth. They are heavily sprayed. It's hard to find organic poinsettias, but you can call around, ask. But a lot of people react to poinsettias because they have a latex protein in them. And those people who are allergic to latex can sometimes react and they don't know what it is. So,
all right. Now you're talking humans, though.
Yes.
They're not toxic to humans, but to animals. Andrea, we're going to get calls. I know, because I just pulled this up. Poinsettias and cats and dogs. What about that? Are they?
I don't know. I mean, it could be in small amount. You'd have to have, I suppose, anything in excess. If you ate a lot of poinsettia leaves, I imagine that's not good for you. So, for even humans. And maybe it's true. I don't know. I don't know anything about. I was thinking people in preparing for today's program,
but
you're
this
right.
Is the thing.
And we
this
have
is
a
the
small
thing.
Dog, so I would be concerned if he were eating it just right. Because of the chemicals, if nothing else.
Pet Poison Helpline says level of toxicity to cats, dogs, horses, cows, and birds is mild. During the holidays, poinsettias are a popular Christmas plant. Though they have a bad rap, poinsettia plants are only mildly toxic to cats and dogs. The milky white sap found in poinsettias contain chemicals called diterpenoids,
like detergents, but they're commonly hyped as poisonous. They rarely are. The poisoning is greatly exaggerated. That's what that website says.
But if you ingest it, you know, you could, just to let you know. Now, here's the other thing. We've had people call in after our program when we've talked about this product. You know what I'm talking about?
I think
about,
I do.
About their dogs. You've got, and they've said, you got to warn people about their pets and using what?
Essential oils.
Essential oils is exactly right, Andrea.
Is there a bell for
you
that?
Win.
Because I won. I'm not interrupting. I actually thank you. Well, it's true. Mm-hmm. And so I guess there's no break that we get as far as being vigilant about pretty much anything. But yeah, some oils don't react well with dogs and some are, you know, toxic. So I do make our own pet dog shampoo and I put one drop of rose geranium essential oil in there, one drop, but I wouldn't put a whole lot because too much wouldn't be good for our little dog. He's little. But it doesn't keep me from using the fact that rose geranium repels ticks and fleas. So that's why I put it in there. So it's like, you know, you do have to be careful.
Yeah, you sure do. All right. It's your opportunity. The floor is open for you. And we start with Akron, Ohio. Marion is on the line. Hi, Marion. Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Sam. I'm just worried about what I've been eating in America for a long time. I came from Africa and I love salmon. However, I don't know what my herb would turn to maybe 20 years from now. I want to get old, see my grandkids. So what are the consequences to be eating GMO food or GMO fish or salmon or anything that has a modified element inside of those foods? What are the consequences in long term?
Well, I think, you know, Marion, that's, there's no way we can know. There's no way anyone could assure you that it's all fine. And that's among those who are concerned about GMOs, that's the question raised, is, well, we don't really know, because so many times we have put something out into, whether it's a product, a chemical, and then years down the road we find out, oops, that wasn't so good for us. And this is the concern. But
is so, there a chance, let me just jump in here, is there a chance that you could, all the concern that you have about GMO and other things, that you could be wrong about that in 25 years, they find out your brain is better off eating a GMO salmon than it is a regular salmon? Is there any chance you could be?
I suppose. My gut feeling is that's not going to be what we found out, only because of the way, how much we have to alter the natural process with restriction enzymes and shock therapy and chemicals. That, you know, it's a very radical approach to genetically modify anything. And just intuitively, I think, well, there was nothing wrong with the salmon that we had in the ocean, except for some of the issues with the ocean. But Marion, I'm really interested to know, is she still on the line? How have you noticed your health and what you've been eating since moving here? I think that's really interesting.
Exactly. Actually, my health really has changed. I feel like I'm weaker than I used to be growing up in Africa and the way I was eating. I was always eating very naturally.
But like what? What was your main food? What was your main food?
I was eating fish a lot. And vegetables, like green vegetables, all green vegetables. Mm. However, since I came here, I tried to accommodate and adjust myself with the diet here in America. But since I'm not really natural, a lot of vegetables I've been eating have a lot of pesticides. And it's all this stuff. So even sometimes when I eat an apple, it tastes differently. So I'm really concerned about my health, and especially for my kids and my grandkids. You know.
Well, I'm glad you called.
Are we covered? Is the legal aspect of it? Are we covered if something happened to us? And even, I don't know. I'm really concerned. That's it. That's all I can say.
And yeah. Well, I appreciate, that's a strong testimony coming from someone raised in a naturally organic environment and then coming here, because even the soil is impacted by all the pesticides, even if you can spray them off or wash them off. And there are countries in Africa who are refusing aid when it's genetically modified. So
let me ask you this. You've met, Andrea, some people from Africa. And what's the first question they ask about?
Well, I worked with a group from Somalia and of women to teach them about fermented foods. And of course, they had one fermented food that they were familiar with, but we were doing sauerkraut and then just talking to them about what they notice about American life. And, one of them said, where are the cows? Where are the cows? I go to the store and all I see is milk. But, and it was such a foreign concept because she was raised, with the cows around and getting fresh milk and so forth. So, I value hearing from you, Marion, and I was really intrigued by how shocked they were with the loss of connection with the origin of food. That's the main thing I came away with in talking to them. It's just so disconnected. And what Marion said, I grew up around fish and vegetables growing right by me.
Yeah. Marion, thank you. Here's Michelle in West Palm Beach, Florida on a Toxic Talk Tuesday. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to the toxicity in the diet sodas and the artificial sweeteners. I have a family member who that's all they drink, and they exhibit all of the symptoms that you read about: migraine, fibromyalgia, dizziness, weakness. And how do you convince someone that what they're putting in their body is toxic? And then if you get them off of it, how long before you would see some reversal of symptoms?
Well, of course, my host will be the one to really answer this because he had diet soda, 2-liter bottles.
Let's not go into that.
This was a while ago, though. So, but Michelle, I would rather have someone on a lemonade drink with real sugar than any of these artificial aspartame and so forth are. They're a chemical and they're toxic to the brain. All the things that you mentioned, they just can lead to a lot of inflammation. But that's not really your question. You already know this, and I can tell you wouldn't drink a diet drink. And as you know, I remember when our son became type 1 diabetic back in 2007, and that was one of the first things they said is just, you know, well, be sure he drinks diet soda. And that's at the time I knew nothing. Like, okay. So once you are dependent on it, it is it's its own addiction. And but going back to help you, there really isn't much you can do. I mean, I struggled with that for many years because I even back then, before I really understood what was in this product, the level of chemical manipulation that goes into this and how hard it is on the brain and the whole immune system, you got to let adults be adults. It's now kids. I would not give it to kids knowing what I know. And we stopped giving it, obviously, to my son and found alternatives and things that he loves, drinks that he loves. But how would you help, Michelle? Because you've been there.
Well, and honestly, you were real concerned about my consumption back then of soft drinks. And I did diet sometimes. And a lot of times I didn't. I did just the straight stuff, you know, the straight soda. And I think the answer is you have to want to change. You have to want to see, you have to ask the question yourself. I wonder what it would be like if I didn't have this. And the big question was, what am I going to supplant? You know, what am I going to give myself and tell myself, okay, this is okay. I'll have this as kind of a comfort thing. And, it was a crisis in 2008, and I haven't had a soda since then. We've had kombucha and some other things, and I do drink coffee. But mostly I changed to water. I just drank water. And when you start drinking water after you've had soft drink, sugared soft drink or diet soft drink, you lose weight, you know, just immediately without doing any kind of exercise or anything. You will lose weight because your body is changing. But I don't think there's anybody that could have told me, or you can show me any study, or, you know, there would be very little of external saying you got to do this, other than maybe a doctor that would have come in and said, you're going to die tomorrow. And that wasn't true. It's a slow process that you had, but Michelle, does that help? Just keep loving them and suggest, you know, hey, I heard these crazy people on the radio.
One idea, Michelle, I remember. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was like, been there, done that. So,
yeah.
I remember having a friend over and serving him kombucha. At the time, I made it super sweet by adding some fruit juice because I knew it would be such a switch. But he didn't drink diet, but he drank a lot of sugar drinks. And so I prepared him, you know. Now, this is a fermented drink. He loved it. And now that's all he drinks. So there's always hope. And it's amazing. It is sometimes finding a better alternative and maybe doing it in steps, like a lemonade drink or something, if the person is willing. And that's the part that you're saying. It's like, I can't do anymore. And I would encourage you to accept that. That's okay. It's not up to you. And you've done the obviously tried. So I think you're very free to let go and just keep taking care of you.
And good for you for caring enough about, you know, to ask that question. Maybe somebody's listening today and you've done that. You've cut out the soda. Tell us why. How did it happen? Was there some kind of crisis in your life? Or did somebody who cares about you, did they say the magic word that caused you not to do that anymore? 877-548-3675. Let's try to get Joanne in Illinois in here before the break. Hi, Joanne. Go right ahead.
Hi there, Chris, Andrea. I work in a commercial kitchen, and we clean our steam table or LimeAway, which is horrible, and several of us have asthma, and it's really very difficult chemical to use. And I've been in other kitchens, and they use white vinegar. And the corporation I work for is hesitant to use the white vinegar because it doesn't have a material safety data sheet, which is required for them to have a, quote, chemical in the kitchen. How can we get around that and use the vinegar, which some of us have started doing on the side, which is much easier on our breathing?
Right. No, there was a study done in Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania University. If you email me, I'll track it down or just start with that search. But anyway, the study was on the effectiveness of white vinegar. I might go with that study. And it shows just how the strength of the antimicrobial nature of that, and offer that as a possibility rather than that material data sheet. Just go with the study. I know you can track it down, and I know it was in the state of Pennsylvania, and that really turned it for me. For some reason, I just needed to see that. Oh, okay. Somebody has shown that this is antimicrobial because they want peace of mind. I understand that. You know, they're being required to make sure everything is disinfected. I wouldn't give up. I would also present a lot on tea tree oil.
Joanne, hang on. We'll talk with you in the break. This is Chris Fabry Live on Moody Radio. It is a December 8th edition of Chris Fabry Live, Toxic Talk Tuesday, with my toxic life coach, Andrea Fabry. You can find out more about her at chrisfabrylive.org. We've got a link to her website right there. And going back to the white vinegar thing.
I said Pennsylvania. It could be a different state, and I can't find that study. That's going to bother me. But I did, you know, you just check for studies on the effectiveness of white vinegar. I found this one, evaluation of household sanitizers for reducing levels of E. coli on iceberg lettuce, for instance. And I guess I wouldn't give up for the sake of your health. I'm sure you're a good worker and would be respected. And I mentioned tea tree oil as one of those historical antimicrobials that can be added even to white vinegar. But again, I don't know what the law says, so
right.
I understand.
If it's a commercial kitchen,
it's tough.
You have standards that you have to meet, then you have to deal with that.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the soda question, because Cheryl's in Michigan. She wanted to talk about that. Hi, Cheryl. Go right ahead.
Hi, Chris. I just tuned in and heard you talking about soda, and I gave it up about 3 or 4 years ago because of an ingredient in there was affecting my skin. The ingredient was citric acid.
Okay.
And it would make my kids would call it, my lovely kids would call it my clown lips.
Hmm.
So they would swell and burn, and it was just very uncomfortable. And you know, I don't miss soda, not a bit.
How did you figure that out?
Well, it wasn't easy. But I had heard way back, I had a girlfriend many, many years back that she had given up soda because it had affected her skin.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, on Sunday nights, it was apples and popcorn night, and we usually have soda. And then it was during the grapefruit season, so we were having popcorn, grapefruit, oranges, and soda. And then I would have a flare-up the next day. And so
okay.
That was what
you put it together.
But
yeah.
here's what's interesting, Cheryl, about your story is that you realized it's doing you harm. And this, I think, is what keeps us going in some of these things. Like, well, I don't think it's hurting me. And someone else telling you it's hurting you, you notice someone else who gave it up. You were introduced to information, you know, but it was you deciding, this isn't good for me, and I think that's what we have to come to.
Which takes us, Cheryl, thank you. Steven is in Naples, Florida. Hi, Steven. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Chris. Good afternoon, Andrea.
Hey, Steven. Pleasure. Thank you.
This is going back a few years, probably 1980. I was working very hard out in the heat, and I found myself thirsty and hitting the Pepsi machine. Back then, that was a popular thing, and it was the old school stuff. And really having low energy problem, you know, just I'd be dragging, and I'd have a Pepsi, and I'd be picked up for about 30 minutes, and then I'd feel like I'm dragging again. So by happenstance, I met a individual who was saying, that sounds like what I had. I've got low blood sugar, hypoglycemia. and you ought to go get it checked out. So I went to the doctor, and they ordered the 5-hour glucose tolerance test, and I passed it. I have hypoglycemia. So I went back to the doctor, and he read the results, and I said, okay, doc, write me the prescription, and I'll go get it filled, and we'll get this thing licked. And says, no, not so fast. You need to go to the library, go to the bookstores, get yourself low blood sugar cookbooks, and start, change your diet. And so it was a radical change of my diet. I read every label, every possible connection to a starch, or, no white potatoes, only sweet potatoes once a week. And I learned, what foods ultimately become sugar and drinks and alcohol. So I did this radical change in my diet.
And what do you drink now?
lots of water. I drink some tea, but I found that within 4 to 5 weeks, all of the issues that I had prior to that basically went away. I had
even your energy level.
Oh man, yeah, I was opening my eyes before the alarm would go off. I'd get 3 to 4 hours sleep a night, and that would be enough. And I was just busy. I spent more on food because I was eating better. I spent a lot of time preparing my own food, so I was cooking more. I haven't been faithful to that whole regimen through the rest of my life, but I have noticed that when I got to a place where I started to drink these monster 46-ounce big gulp things 3 or 4 times a day, my attitude went south really quick. I got real short-tempered, short-fused, didn't have a lot of patience. And it was because I was getting mega doses of sugar and corn syrup and all that stuff, sweetener.
Most of the time, we don't connect that. Most of the time, you don't connect your mood and your behavior and energy level with the stuff that you put in your body, with the stuff you're drinking or you're eating. And to ask those questions and then to go to the doctor and have it confirmed, I think is a good thing.
That's awesome and good for you. And now you take note, everybody who can go off and go back on, and our body should have some margin. But when you are ill and you realize that what you put into your body can make a difference, it's very empowering. And as the new year approaches and people are thinking about making dietary changes, I would say in the next month, as the holiday season, note your moods. Note the way you fall asleep, on what you eat, and start to just take notes, even before you make any changes. Just being observant of your body in connection with your physical well-being and your emotions, I think, can really do a lot.
And that's where your wireless thing, we had talked about that, and gadgets, and the way that the brain is being kind of reprogrammed
used by that,
and what you get your kids for Christmas, and what that's doing, and the games that they play, and the amount of TV that they watch, or the video that they watch, all of that. You just ask the question: is this affecting us positively or negatively? There's nothing wrong with asking those questions. And thank you for your call. Let's go to Carol in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I am so proud of you for doing this show. I can't tell you. It's an answer to my prayers. I have a nutrition background. I'm in science. I've researched cancer for the past 36 years. I taught science for 36 years too. And the genetically modified organism, that issue, there are more than 30 countries that have banned GMOs because they have proven that they cause cancer. And, to your listeners, I would say be very careful and selective in what you buy, especially strawberries. Strawberries are at the top of one of the most toxic fruits. Genetically modified corn, soy, all of those things are wreaking havoc on people's health. And
Wait a minute. Let me jump in here, Carol. Let me ask you this. Because there are farmers around the country who are listening right now. I have friends who are farmers and who they grow whatever seeds are available that they can grow. And many of those have been modified for one thing or another. And so they will call and they will say, look, you cannot prove this is causing cancer. You can't prove it's wreaking havoc. Yes, there are countries around the country, around the world, who said no to it. But you can't specific, you know, you can't prove to me that this is a bad thing, or the government wouldn't be allowing it. So what do you say to the farmer who's just trying to get by and to grow the, you know, food that people can consume?
God bless the farmers, but, you know, the Lord gave us everything we needed in our natural environment. To genetically modify it is a slap in God's face, for starters. And then the second thing I would say is, unfortunately, those people who were very high up in Monsanto, the company that produces this stuff, are now part of our FDA. And, you know, Chris, honestly, think about what you hear at night on the radio. All of these pharmaceutical drugs get passed by our FDA, who's supposedly trying to protect us, but yet they have, you know, I listen to these drugs, and you, any one of them, and you hear the side effects may be, oh, dizziness, fainting, and cancer and death. How did they get approved? How did they get approved if that's good for us? And, you know, I'm sorry I'm on a soapbox here, but I I try and educate as many people as I can every opportunity I get, because God has blessed us. We don't need scientists in a lab.
And you are a scientist. And you are a scientist, so, you know, you're not degrading science by any means, but... You know, one of the most interesting things about genetically modified plants to me is that it was assumed that because humans don't have a shikimate pathway, plants do, humans don't, therefore it's not going to affect us, you know. But the microbes in our intestines and our bodies, were mostly 10 times more microbes, do have those. And so what they're finding now is, well, that's disrupting our gut flora. You know, out of a false assumption that because we don't have this, and there was just a lack of information, and this was turned out so quickly, really, in retrospect. I know some of this took years. I mean, they've been looking at the GMO salmon for many years, but honestly, in the span of human history, this is a very tiny window of time without those consequences of down the road generations, what it's going to show by manipulating God's creation, just what Carol said. And obviously, you know, Carol and I have strong thoughts. Everybody has them. The good news is we're all able to think about this and have choice. And we live in a country where we can talk about it. And I do understand that farmers are making a living. And I, you know, it's all happened so fast. And I have great respect for what farmers are trying to do in today's day and age.
Well, we have a friend who is in the genetic modification business, and he totally disagrees with what you and Carol are talking about here, because he's trying to develop a seed that will grow in sub-Saharan Africa where you can't grow anything and the people are hungry. And it's like, here's the good news. The good news is we're all trying to help everybody. You know, we're trying to do a good thing. But the question is, and this will go with vaccines as well, and we can get into that conversation, you get this, I'm on this side, well, I'm on this side. And the truth is, the people who are making the vaccines, yeah, you can talk about the profit motive, but they want to keep people healthy. They want people to get polio, it's mumps and rubella and measles, et cetera, et cetera. They want to keep people healthy. But the people who are on the other side, who are skeptical sometimes of some vaccines, will say, but what is that doing? What is that? Well, what are we putting into our kids' bodies and our bodies when we do that? Both sides want the best. Both sides want health. Both sides of the GMO thing, I really think at heart, if you talk with them, it's like, we want to help people not go hungry. Well, I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? And how do we, and what about these questions that we have? So we can either use this to divide us and to get us really fighting with each other about year and the global warming or climate change is the same kind of issue, I think, because there are scientists who are on one side or on the other, and we can be at each other's throats, or we can say, or the even the gun issue. There's nobody here that says, I want more people to be killed by guns today and tomorrow than yesterday. There's nobody saying that. We all want there to be a safe world. Now, how do we go about that? And how can we not be at each other's throats? Let me take a break and have you respond to that. Andrea Fabry on Toxic Talk Tuesday.
Have a comment about the program today? Call 877-LIVE-675. That's 877-LIVE-675.
Thanks for joining us for Chris Fabry Live and a Toxic Talk Tuesday for December. Merry Christmas to you and yours. This will be our last Toxic Talk Tuesday before Christmas. And I want to give you an opportunity, Andrea, to respond to my soapbox.
The gun and all the vaccine everything, and everything.
All those issues can divide us.
And, you know, I don't think that technology, genetic modification in general is a black or white issue. I think there are real concerns when we ingest it. I think there are concerns. To me, the issue is, are we free to ask questions about something that we still don't know whether or not it's safe? And even one of the proponents of genetic modification in a book he wrote in 1993 said the more people, it was biotechnology from A to Z, and he said in the book, the more people know about genetic modification, the more concerns they'll have. So his advice to the industry is we don't want to educate too much. And I do think the more the consumer knows is a good thing. And it comes down to how are we being responsible with technology? And I don't think we have to just throw everything out. It's an either or. We wouldn't be able to function in today's world. It comes down to your decision and as you approach the world. And I just encourage a healthy mindset that's willing to ask questions and not just either live in fear or put your head in the sand and say, you know, la, 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 none of this is happening. I can't think about it, and dismiss it. So both of those extremes I don't think are healthy. So I just think it's how we approach it all.
Linda is in Ohio. Linda, your question or comment?
Hi, compliments to your staff, Chris, and blessings on your family as you get ready for Christmas.
Thank you.
The question that I wanted to ask Andrea, please, is does tea tree oil have an expiration date? And then what are the medicinal topical uses that she's aware of? I had heard that they were good if people had problems with their toenails. So just was curious what Andrea knew.
Well, the reason for the toenails is it's a strong antifungal, and so many yeast problems or fungus issues happen in around our feet and nails and so forth. So, you know, if you can dilute it in a carrier oil or apply it straight on, it's known to be very effective. Only because historically it's been used for centuries as an antimicrobial. As far as expiration, if it's stored in a dark bottle, brown, blue, you know, when it's exposed to light, it deteriorates. It probably does have where it loses strength. I don't know that it ever goes moldy or bad because it's got so many antimicrobials. If you combine it with water, it can go bad. So if it's straight, very pure essential oil in a dark bottle, I would say you can have it for years to come. And you would know by the smell of it, does it smell good? I go, even when you're fermenting foods, it's your instinct that will know. Does it smell off? Then I would toss it. It's not worth it. We can get tea tree oil pretty easily in today's world. Just try and get it as pure as possible. But as far as, you know, applying it topically, I've known it to be very effective for acne, eczema. Even just on the lungs, when you have a lung infection, you know, the skin absorbs and then circulates these chemicals. We know that because of patches that we wear, even drug patches. So it can be very effective when you have a cold and maybe under your nose. But again, it can be a little strong. So you can put it in a carrier oil, like a certain type of fractionated coconut oil. Jojoba oil is a very good carrier oil. And that's a way to make it last longer. But it's endless what tea tree oil can do. And I'm not saying it's the miracle product of our day and age at all. It's just one more option when you're trying to deal with any number of symptoms. And I do, clean with it. I'll just put a few drops in my white vinegar. It just adds that nice boost. Not everyone likes the way that it smells, so you kind of have to get used to it. I love the smell of it because it smells so medicinal. You can just tell. So
the two comments today, it's endless what tea tree oil can do, and I try to have seaweed every day. Just write that down. Now, we did not get to the Christmas tree question of toxicity in Christmas trees?
Well, real or fake? I mean, it's on everybody's mind. What do I do? And they're all, it's all a trade-off. And there is even a study done in 2011 showing that now this could be an organic tree. This is where you just, you know, put your head in your hands and just, you know, so frustrating because what can you do? But I still think this is valuable information. I mean, they went to a lot of trouble to do this study to show that a lot of people's asthma and allergies are exacerbated in the season because there's mold on the tree because of the way it's stored, or, you know, it was wet and then it got stored. And so it can aggravate. Even an organic tree can do that. So that's just something to be mindful of. We're getting real now, and we've done great with that. I don't have any problem. I mean, the plastics and the disposal of the fake tree, I just don't think there's an easy one size fits all on the tree. The ideal is organic, dry tree. Mm-hmm. You can hose it off if you have concerns. That's probably ideal to bring inside. But I guess I want to encourage everyone just to have a Merry Christmas. Don't take this on. But if you have like symptoms, you're having trouble breathing around your tree, I'm just saying that could be why. It could also be the chemicals that are sprayed on there.
Right. Holiday fragrances, we didn't talk about that.
Well, you know, just try and go natural. More and more we're learning the disruption from the endocrine disrupting chemicals, phthalates and the fragrance oils. It'll just say fragrance oil. That can mean 500 chemicals in fragrance oil. So just go natural. You can put a simmering potpourri on the stove of cinnamon and bay leaves and orange, and it'll smell wonderful. I would steer clear of those fragrances because you don't need them.
Hey, we didn't get to a number of calls here. Jessica said in Georgia, even though we disagree, we need to respect one another. I'm not so afraid about vaccines anymore. I'm still wary. And that's the way some people may feel about GMOs as well. So I agree on the respect. Andrea, you have my respect. Come back and see us in the new year.
Yes, we're going to talk about safe office spaces.
On Chris Fabry Live, a production of Moody Radio in Chicago.